This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Yes, well, I would never say that teaching is it should be considered a farm team. It's just that's a whole different sport entirely.
Oh, I'm in grad school.
Yes, grad school, yes. I just want to make sure I don't get any angry letters from teachers.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the Bryce Harper of Education Policy, Dara Z. Handler.
Thank you. Young, but not quite 19 anymore.
Yes, Bryce, he is a star of the Washington Nationals, the first baseball team in D.C. to go to the playoffs in a long, long time. And they won their division. And yes, Bryce Harper, a rookie at 19, one of the stars. But Dara, you are still new to Fordham. You know, you're just off the graduate school minor leagues, and now That's you're true. Into the majors.
I spent a very, very long time on various farm teams.
Yes, yes. Well, I would never say that teaching it should be considered a farm team. It's just that's a whole different sport entirely.
Oh, I'm in grad school.
Yes, grad school, yes. I just want to make sure I don't get any angry letters from teachers. No. Though I have to say, listeners, I'd appreciate any kind of letters. You guys don't write enough. You should. Or tweet me. At Michael Petrilli. Okay, lots to cover. Big week. Of course, there's a debate happening this week. By the time you've all listened to it, it'll probably have already happened. But other stuff happening as well in the world of education. Ty is here to play Pardon the Gadfly.
The NAACP filed a suit last week alleging that admitting students to New York City's selective public high schools solely based on test scores is discriminatory towards blacks and Hispanics. Do admission policies in the Big Apple need to change? And if so, how?
Dara, what's your view?
This is a view from personal experience. So now I'm going to take off my researcher hat for a second and understand that I went to a magnet school in LAUSD, where magnet school admissions policies are an absolute mess. They are completely unnavigable for parents, for students. You have points for this and sibling points and this, and there's a book 8 inches thick, and it is an absolute mess. So I understand the need to have a streamlined system where you take a test and your test score places you at a certain school or not. We'll get to the NAACP's point about, or their point about discrimination is separate, but I see this going in the complete opposite direction because I came from a terrible system.
Okay. So, you know, in this case, look, I think a couple things. First of all, I don't think it's a great system to just look at test scores. Most other selective schools around the country do what colleges do, selective colleges. They look at the broader aspect of the applicant's credentials, looking at grades, teacher recommendations, essays, that sort of thing. You know, we've had this huge huge cheating scandal at Stuyvesant, as I said the other day with Checker. Look, maybe that's in part because all you're looking at are these test scores. And so you haven't had a chance to ask questions of teachers or even the kids that get at their character and integrity and their values. You know, so maybe that's showing up. That said, I really don't like this disparate impact analysis. You know, I think Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York, was right when he said, look, it's a test. You know, it's a test of reading and math skills. And the chips fall where they may. It's hard to say that a race-blind test is in some way discriminatory. But that's at the heart of a lot of debates today. And by the way, it's at the heart of the question on things like teacher certification exams. Same issue. When we raise those cut scores, we tend to see minority applicants fail at greater rates. Is that discriminatory, or is that simply a logical outcome of what we're all working to fight, which is the achievement gap?
Well, how do you address the argument then that since it is based on a single test that you can prepare for, that the preparation resources are available only to those of a certain socioeconomic status with certain resources.
Now, I think that's legitimate, although I think if you look at these schools and you look at the recent book that Checker did with Jessica Hockett, you find that, you know, it's not a bunch of rich white kids that are going to these selective schools. I mean, there's a lot of relatively low-income Asian kids that are going to these. You know, so I think that that's a little bit of a red herring. The bottom line is, should we just be looking at test scores alone? Look, educationally, I don't think it's a great point, but this disparate impact analysis is really dangerous. I wish that the NAACP and the Urban League were going after the real, you know, the causes, the fundamental issues around the achievement gap, rather than just shooting the messenger, which is what this accounts to. Okay, topic number two.
30,000 students in Fordham's home state of Ohio are now enrolled in online schools. Is this cause for celebration or concern?
Woohoo! Well, okay. It would be cause for a celebration there if it didn't come down to the fact that most of these schools suck.
Well, that's the whole reason why they can enroll in these online courses, correct? That the course is not offered at their home school, or their home school is just terrible.
Well, no. I'm saying the online schools suck.
Oh. I mean,
we have a huge quality problem in Ohio around online education. You've got a lot of evidence that says the kids are not doing very well in these schools. A lot of low performers, a lot of money going to them. And many of these schools are run by for-profit companies who are, among other things, fighting back against quality control mechanisms. And get this, fighting against new entrants to the market. If you want to start a new online school in Ohio, that is hard to do because these for-profits are trying to keep them out. It's a mess.
Is there a better way to regulate it?
I'm glad you asked, Tara. Well, this is a good question. I mean, what's happened in Ohio is that the bar was very low for these schools on the front end. There's not the political capital to close some of these schools down on the back end. The charter school authorizers that oversee these schools are minting money off the school fees that come from them. These are huge schools, and if they take a cut of, 2 or 3% of the per pupil, it's a lot of money. So these charter authorizers are not incentivized to shut them down and shut down this revenue source. So you have got all kinds of crazy perverse incentives happening in Ohio here. And those of us that really think digital learning has promise and that school choice has promise have got to keep working to deal with this problem. It is really an ugly scar on the face of school choice and digital learning.
Is there a danger then that the Ohio example could be held up for people who don't want virtual schools at all? And now you cut off that opportunity for students who are in schools where these courses aren't being offered or they don't have access to the content.
No, absolutely. And look, I support the idea of online full-time virtual schools. If it's kind of a homeschooling model or something that could be done from a computer lab or an after-school center, I mean, I think it's an important part of the conversation. But as with charter schools in general in Ohio, these Ohio virtual charter schools have not gone off to a good start. And yeah, it's already being held up by opponents of virtual schooling to say, see, the same problem that we have in higher ed with these for-profit online schools, diploma mills, just, we have the same problem in K-12, and unfortunately, the Ohio example feeds right into that narrative. Topic number 3, Ty.
Mike, you recently returned from the Policy Innovators in Education Network's annual summit. What are 3 developments in state-level advocacy that you see on the horizon?
Well, what I listened to there was trying to find out what state-level school reform groups are working on. Now, these are groups that are not think tanks. They really are advocacy groups that have an agenda. They're trying to get passed in the legislature. These are groups that you've heard of, like ConCan and the other member groups of 50CAN, many of the Stand for Children affiliates, Education Trust West and Education Trust Midwest, as well as some standalone groups like Advance Illinois, the Rodell Foundation, and many others. It's a great network. And what you hear, first of all, is everybody's working hard on implementation, implementing teacher evaluations, implementing Common Core. And those are 2 big, huge lifts, and trying to figure out how to now make sure that this stuff gets implemented well at the district level. When I look at what's happening on the horizon, though, a couple things. First of all, I think that many states are ripe for a big school finance overhaul. You could argue we haven't seen anything really massive since 1993 when John Engler overhauled the Michigan system, something that would very differently look at how you raise revenue for schools, how you split it up, moving more to a state-level funding, maybe student-based funding. I think that's something that's percolating. Looks like teacher preparation is certainly an issue that's getting a lot of attention, and the National Council on Teacher Quality and their review of ed schools deserves credit for that. People understand that, hey, we're tackling teacher evaluation. We got to tackle this issue of teacher quality at the source. A lot of talk about principals as well. Let's do for leaders what we've done to teachers, for better or for worse. And then there's an issue that I hope, maybe this is just me hoping, is starting to percolate, which is special education reform, something the reform crowd has seemingly not wanted to touch with a 10-foot pole. Funders don't want to touch it, but it's a big issue. We're talking about 10 or 12% of the kids, a lot of the money. And a lot of what's wrong with special education really comes back to what's wrong with regular education. Hard to have a conversation about reforming our schools without tackling that issue, too. Dara, what do you think? Are any of these more or less likely to really hit big time?
I think it depends on who's doing the decision making. When you're talking about education finance, you're talking about very complicated set of state laws, state budgets, often court decisions. So you're running up against a very large brick wall. When you throw in special education in the mix, now you're also talking about a potential federal impediments to change. So whether some of them are more or less necessary, I'd say that those 2 we might not see as much as we need because there are significant barriers to change right now.
Okay, that's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
So, Amber, have you become a Washington Nationals fan?
I have. I have become a Nationals fan. Yeah, it's kind of exciting, right? How could you not become a Nationals fan?
Have you been to a game? Have you gone?
I've been to a game and been to like 3 Orioles games. I've been a big baseball fan this year.
Yeah.
I would argue you can't be a fan of both. You have to pick one.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Baltimore, that's a far enough away, I think.
All right. Well, yes, it's unlikely that both Washington and Baltimore will get into the World Series, though still right. possible at this point. Still
yes.
possible. All right. That would be kind of fun, an I-95 series.
Yes, it would.
So what you got for us this week?
Oh, new installment of from this is the Center on Ed Policy. They do this annual report on high school exit exams. This is the 11th one, but some interesting trends, I think, in light of the Common Core and what it means to implement and assess it. Analysts report that 25 states administered exit exams in 2011-2012. Rhode Island plans to do so in 2014. Mostly these tests are in math and reading. We know that few do it in science. 69% of students are enrolled in states with these exams, but end of course exams continue to grow in popularity. 70-90% of kids pass the exam on the first try. All states allow retakes, typically between 4 and 6 opportunities, but as few as 2 and as many as 12 in guess what state?
Texas?
Maryland, my home state. Maryland and Oregon both allow give kids 12 times to pass that sucker.
So I'd be curious what happens between the 11th and the 12th time to really put a kid over the
over
edge.
Over the edge. Lots of test prep, I can tell you that.
I also like the 70-90% pass. That's a pretty big range.
Yeah, and that's because the report goes into how difficult it is to count these passing rates. But anyway, states allow alternative routes to passing. Big surprise there, like using scores on a military entrance exam or rewarding a certificate of completion. Many states report that these exams are not aligned to college and career standards, but it is in the works. Most states, as we know, plan to keep their exit exams, but to replace them with CCSSS-aligned assessments being developed by PARC and SBAC. All states also report that higher ed and employers are not using the results to gauge college and career readiness, which is problematic. Another interesting wrinkle, 9 states now require students to take a college entrance exam, such as ACT or SAT, Kentucky, Louisiana, North Carolina, Illinois. But they don't require those kids to achieve a certain passing score to obtain their diploma. And then finally, the last section talks about the politics around this. It was a pretty good discussion in terms of, you know, the pressure to water down some of these tests. Some of them have been legally challenged in Arizona. I don't know if you guys remember a few years back, there was this big challenge that kids, Arizona didn't have sufficient funding, so kids weren't getting the services they needed to pass the test, and so on and so forth. So they're in flux, these high school exit exams and these policies in light of Common Core. So I think it's sort of interesting to track it.
So when you look at 25 states, does that include the ones that do end of course exams?
No, they're in addition. That's what they're saying, that there's another push, that those are getting more and more popular. And another little wrinkle in this, these are states that require students to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually additional states that actually, you know, have exit exams, but they just don't require the kids pass them.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, see, what I think is interesting is this. Look, the Common Core standards are coming on board, and there's going to be a lot of pressure for the cut scores to stay high, mm-hmm. right, to really indicate college readiness, which means that tons of kids are going to fail. There's no way states are going to deny half of the kids in their state a high school diploma, right? So I don't think these are going to really be exit exams anymore. Mm. I mean, I think what you're going to see is states say, we will give you some kind of special credential on your diploma if you pass the test. It will be used for higher education decisions. But I think we're going to actually say goodbye to the exit exams if Common Core comes in, because there's just no way politically people can deal with failure rates of, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60%.
And that's what we're already seeing in some of these states with these completion diplomas. You know, it's like, okay, you're getting a diploma, but it looks a little different than if you were to pass the test. So,
or it becomes a gauge for school accountability as opposed to student accountability. Nothing happens to the student if they don't pass, but you can look at a school's pass rate of their students.
And are these tests still, as far as we know, given mostly in the 10th grade, 8th grade level?
10th grade, which is different than end of course, right? Which can be, you know, at 9th grade, whenever. So, 10th, 11th, some in 12th grade. I mean, they have a little table in their report that tells you what year they're given.
Yeah. What do you think about allowing, if kids pass the military exam, allowing that to count?
Yeah, I don't know anything about the rigor of the military exam. Do you know anything about that?
Well,
test?
It's rigorous enough that a lot of kids fail it, yeah. But no, I don't know
the
exactly
ASVAB,
where it's pegged.
Is that what it's called?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about.
And if it's pegged at around the same level as some of those SAT and ACT college readiness levels, which again don't seem terribly high when I hear the numbers, but a lot of kids don't make it through those either.
And I mean, I'm wondering, what do you think about this ACT, SAT? Do you think that's going to continue to sort of proliferate? Because it seemed like this was a trend. More and more states are kind of looking at that now. So
I think it depends on what the state envisions is the purpose of the exit exam. Is it to judge what the kids learned in high school? Or is it to judge if they're ready for the next thing? And if it's to judge if they're ready for the next thing, use the exam, the military exam or the SAT, ACT, for whatever the next thing is that they're ready for. If it's to judge whether what they learned in high school, then it needs to be something that is specifically aligned to what they were supposed to have learned.
Right. Just and the ACT course. Has at least a better story on that. At least it's a curriculum-based test, and they say they're tweaking it for the Common Core. We'll have to see if the ACT decides to try to compete with the PARC and Smarter Balanced consortia that seems likely. Hey, one more thing. You know what I'd love for states to do? You know what test they should have kids all pass? Is the citizenship exam. Just like new citizens do to the country. I think it's like 100 different questions. I think maybe 10 get chosen at random. You got to pass. I think you got to get maybe 6 or 7 right. Easy as that. I just think that would go a long
way.
Kinda
neat idea. I like it.
All right.
No problem.
Good. Okay.
I thought you were going to say a swim test.
Oh, well, that's not a bad idea either, there. But, you know, now we're just adding to the regulations here. Here we are, micromanaging from Washington. What, everybody's got to swim now. Ooh. All right, that sounds all right, we got it all figured out. We just need our own state that we could be in charge of. And
yeah.
Hey, how about Ohio? Okay, Ohio, let's work on this citizenship exam.
All right.
Thanks as always, Amber, Dara. It was a pleasure. That's all of our time. Until next week.
I'm Dara Zehandelar.
And I'm Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.